Greetings. Greetings once again to all my enemies and all my friends. That's right, it's the Weekly Worldview, and I'm your host, Doug McBurney. Welcome back. It's the show where we don't take calls, we don't tolerate sponsors, but we do help focus you on the events of the week. Through the lens of original thought, it's good to have everyone here with us as we spring forward into spring. It's pretty much spring, or almost spring. It's coming right up, and we want to welcome you to it. We are here as well. And I just want to start with a political prediction, not to be too political, but and not to say I told you so. This is from the In Your Face file. The Fulton County Ethics Board has decided not to hear the complaint against Fannie Willis in the Donald Trump case. They say that the Fulton County Code of Ethics applies to county officers and employees, and the district attorney does not fall within the definitions of a county officer. Although I'd be interested to find out who signs the paycheck for, but it doesn't really matter. It doesn't really matter because they can do what they can do, and the bureaucracy is the enemy now. The bureaucracy is the enemy in a cold civil war. And it has been since, I don't know, since 2015, 16, somewhere back there. So will the cold civil war get hot before November? Or will both sides opt to accept another sop to the few living real Americans that are left with the, you know, with their traditional swing back from the far left, just back to the left? And then everyone agrees to go on eating and drinking, marrying and giving in marriage until the day that the flood comes to take them all away. I really don't know who can predict. They just may drag this on for a few more years. And the debt's going up by $1 trillion every 3 months, but nobody even knows what that means because nobody can comprehend that. I certainly don't know. So all I know is that the devil hasn't had a 10 million person plus bloodletting in almost 80 years. And George Soros has very little left to live for than instigating one of those. And so maybe 2024 is the year that the reckoning begins. Maybe not. Maybe it just goes on like it's been and just slowly creeps. Slouches ever further toward Gomorrah. I'm not here to predict. I'm just here to tell you I told you that Fannie Willis is not going to. No, despite all the sensational headlines that sucked all the air out of the room for the better part of a week back in February. But that just doesn't matter. Meanwhile, the U.S. Embassy in Russia has issued an urgent warning of an imminent terrorist attack in Moscow. That's right. And they should know, right? If anyone knows if there's going to be a terrorist attack in Moscow, it would be people inside the U.S. Embassy in Russia. That's right. Members of the Victoria Nuland State Department, the Hillary Clinton State Department, and all of those. I guess Moscow police thwarted a planned massacre at a synagogue this past week. And the U.S. Embassy of personnel says, since we're at war with Russia, the U.S. State Department is anyway, since they're at war with Russia and ISIS is Barack Obama's greatest contribution to the world order is ISIS. So he should know what they're up to. And the girls that work for him should know. That's right. ISIS is the greatest contribution of Barack Obama and the rest of the criminally insane sex cult that seized Western civilization sometime around 2020. And there are concerns that they could strike in and around Moscow at any moment. And from there, we go to the Crossroads file down at the Crossroads, you know, where the deal with the devil is proffered. Former Chicago Mayor Lori Lightfoot. Speaking of a deal with the devil, has joined a prestigious East Coast law firm, the Boston-based Charles River Associates, has brought on Lori Lightfoot. They say in a press release, quote, Lori E. Lightfoot, not to be confused with other Lori Lightfoots, who could have never gotten this job based on their qualifications. We're talking about Laura E. Lightfoot, advises companies, boards, and the council who represent them in investigations responding to and emerging stronger from crises, serious allegations of fraud and misconduct, and high-stakes civil and criminal disputes. That's a page that on the website that they've already drawn up for Lori there, derived from their press release announcing her auspicious hiring. So, by the way, Lori Lightfoot also got a Harvard teaching gig, teaching people how to respond to COVID. 3 years after COVID, she's teaching a class on it. Uh-huh. So how does Lori Lightfoot end up a professor at Harvard and an associate at a prestigious East Coast law firm? No doubt, Jeffrey Epstein had videotape of all the senior partners of Charles River Associates and anyone associated with the firm. I mean, how else does an utterly incompetent pervert get hired by a prestigious East Coast law firm? I mean, unless the partners are blackmailed, there's just no other way. There's no other logical explanation. The firm is going to have to hire someone full time just to keep her from damaging the firm. But apparently that's better than it getting out whatever Epstein had on his videotapes on the partners at Charles River Associates. Allegedly. We certainly don't want Charles River's associates coming after us with now that they've got the equivalent of a pit pug, Lori Lightfoot there at the firm. So and of course we wish all the best to them going forward. Well, all the best in the sense that that they would be turned over to Satan, turn their flesh over to Satan, that their soul might be saved in the day of the Lord. That's the best you can hope for them. Meanwhile, the conservative media distraction of the week this past week were all the headlines and all the stories surrounding the State of the Union address that gives the alleged conservative media time to talk about how bad the Democrats are while distracting attention from the fact that they're destroying civilization. The conservative, the Republicans. I shouldn't say the conservatives. Although those who call themselves conservatives are basically destroying civilization while telling us how bad the Democrats are. And how bad is it? How close is civilization from the brink? Well, I noted this past week that we had a United Airlines operated 737 rolled off the runway in Houston, got stuck in the mud. Another Boeing 777 lost a tire during takeoff out of San Francisco. The tire crushed cars on the ground. Yeah. Fortunately, no one was in those cars. Be a much worse story. Another American-operated 777 clipped a Frontier Airbus at the airport in Miami. And then we had another emergency landing that occurred somewhere between Mexico City and Miami, but don't look too closely because you might not want to get on a plane. I have to get on two airplanes in the next 30 days or so. And so I just happen to notice stories like this. That's all. I just happen to notice because not that I'm worried about civilization. I'm worried about myself getting on an airplane, which I know is probably irrational because what are the odds that the ultimate quota hire ends up being either the pilot or the air traffic controller for my plane? I mean, at this point, the odds are still fairly slim, but they seem to be creeping up every week, and it's somewhat disconcerting. All right. So there we have that. I'll talk a little bit more about the State of the Union possibly later, possibly not, because we want to go into the decline and fall file where the New York Post is reporting that J.K. Rowling, who is the famed Harry Potter author, who has had the audacity to assert that men and women are a thing, each one being its own thing, different from the other, one being different from the other. She's And now the former Great Britain's first transgender national news anchor, the New York Post reports that the first transgender national news anchor, the first of many, I'm sure, over there in the former Great Britain, has accused, and not only accused, but is seeking to bring charges against author J.K. Rowling to the police, asking the police to bring charges because J.K. Rowling misgendered her on social media, which is apparently, if it's not a crime in the European Union, it's either about to be or they want it to be, or this is the poster girl case. Let's see, the UK's first transgender national news anchor is a guy named Ian Willoughby who dresses like a girl and then demands to be called India, which isn't even a girl's name. It's a subcontinent. But anyway, if he can demand that you call him whatever he wants, demand that you call him North America or Africa or India in this case. And the New York Post plays along with that, of course. Now, we didn't. We scratched out the name India, and we inserted the name Ian because we know that trannies tend to stick with the first letter. For whatever reason, it's kind of an odd thing. I mean, if your name is Richard, then you change your name to Roberta. Because, for whatever reason, Ian is now India. And dressing like a girl, demanding that J.K. Rowling call him she or her or... Z, I'm not sure what her pronoun is, but J.K. Rowling did not comply. Rowling called Ian a man revealing his misogynistic performance of what he thinks women means, what he thinks woman means. Man, maybe I could try that again. J.K. Rowling said of Ian that he is, quote, just a man. A man. That, there you go. Just a man. And she could have stopped right there, and that's enough of an offense just to call Ian a man. But she went on to say that he's revealing his misogynistic performance of what he thinks woman means, which is, I mean, you can tell she's pretty good with she's pretty good with tossing off a phrase, I'll tell you. She then goes on to call Ian a shallow exhibitionist for dressing like a woman and demanding to be called India. Uh-huh. Yeah. And so Willoughby has alleged a breach of both the Equalities Act and the Gender Recognition Act, which they have over there in the European Union. Or no, this is the United Kingdom. Didn't they bow out of the European Union? Maybe that's so. He might be trying to charge Rowling under an EU law because they haven't passed it in the UK yet. I'm not sure, but it's all for show, anyways. Because the tranny just wants to draw attention to himself, and the media just wants to play along so that they can normalize trannies drawing attention to themselves and everyone playing along as if it's normal, because that's the big game picture of Satan and George Soros and the rest, is they just want to keep this conversation going so it becomes more and more normal every day, so that a generation or so from now, the kids won't know that at one point we all knew that men and women were a thing. Two things. One being different than the other. That's the... anyway, J.K. Rowling says that free speech is protected under British law, she seems to think. I would not bet on that, JK. So, which I think she's going to have to here pretty soon, because I think charges are forthcoming, I do believe. She says she'd rather serve jail time than be forced to concede that gender isn't a biological trait. And being an author, she should know that gender is... Not only is gender not a biological trait, it's a literary trait. It's a grammatical trait. It's not even biological at all, JK. For you, being an author, not to say and recognize that we shouldn't even be using this term, well, it just shows that even JK has been pulled back from absolute reality to a confused position that she doesn't even fully understand, and that's sad. She does imply that sex is determined at birth, even though she uses the term gender. We'll let that slide because, well, we won't let it slide. If J.K. Rowling doesn't know it, how's the average public school product supposed to know it? They don't even know. They barely even, they didn't know what a pronoun was until all this erupted. Britain's Labour Party plans to make deliberately calling someone by the wrong gender a hate crime, punishable by imprisonment. J.K. Rowling says, good, I'd rather go to jail than play along with all this. And despite the fact that J.K. hasn't cleared up the grammar for her, for all of us, I should say, or for herself, we do hope that she stands by her pledge and goes to jail rather than playing along with the lie that there's no difference between the sexes. Worldview. Yeah, yeah. Just please. Could you just get out of here with that? We're just so sick of hearing about it. And they're all so obsessed with talking about it. So we should do what my mentor, Bob Enyar, he used to have a homo-free month back in the 90s when they were just talking about being faggots. And he was trying to stem the tide as best he could, but it's like pushing sand against the tide. JK's about to find out what that's all about, for real. Because we went to jail for it back in the 90s, for crying out loud. And so, at least we staved it off within our own families and within our own circle of influence. And so we were successful in as far as that went. And now let's go. Should we go to the State of the Union address or the suicide? So let's go to the suicide. This is from the Like a Suicide file. Do you remember the man who killed 18 people at a bar in Maine? No, you don't. Hardly. Barely, right? Maybe. I would have to remind you of the details, right? Mm-hmm. Because there's just so much massive amount of bloodshed and slaughters happening all the time that you barely remember that that a guy shot 18 people. He killed 18 people at a bowling alley in Maine just a couple of months ago. Well, the medical examiner requested a post-mortem study of the killer's brain by the Boston University CTE Center. CTE, by the way, is chronic traumatic encephalopathy. And it's been linked to, well, all kinds of football players have it. And then when they kill themselves, they take their brain and they pick through it and they say, well, he had CTE. And it turns out that this maniac who murdered all these people at the bowling alley, he was an instructor at an Army hand grenade training range. And it's believed that he was exposed to thousands of low-level blasts, according to doctors at Boston University's Concussion Legacy Foundation. They said at the Boston University CTE Center that they did find evidence of traumatic brain injury in the maniac killer's brain. They said he had significant degeneration, axonal and myelin loss, inflammation, and small blood vessel injury. But they said they found no evidence of chronic traumatic encephaly, and the family had submitted the brain hoping to, I'm sure they're just hoping to, they want a doctor to say there was something wrong with your son. This wasn't your fault. He had a disease that caused him to murder all these people. So don't feel guilty about the way you raised your kid. I'm sure they feel terrible, right? The parents, can you imagine your kid slaughters a bunch of people? I can't even comprehend how you deal with that. And by the way, the parent may have done nothing of any significant wrong. It could have just been the average human being. None of us are perfect. We're all sinners, right? And your child ends up a maniac, a mass killer. It's just horrible. So they were hoping to get a CTE diagnosis just for their own, just to make themselves feel better, I suppose. But the investigators did say that they cannot say that these pathological findings of significant degeneration, axonal myelin loss, inflammation, small blood vessel injury. We can't say that those had nothing to do with the behavioral changes in the last 10 months of the life of the maniac killer. They say brain injury likely played a role in the crazed killer's symptoms before he went on his killing spree. And so the family, I suppose they could read that and maybe that helps ameliorate some of the horrible suffering they're going through. So I have to remind everyone, of course, on October 25th, 2023, this maniac killed 18 people, shot 13 other people after opening fire at a local bar and bowling alley in Lewiston, Maine, before ABC News says he died by suicide. Suicide snuck up on him after he... Did I say snuck up? Mm-hmm. I did. So J.K. Rowling would be correcting me now. She'd be saying sneaked up. Suicide sneaked up on him. Come on now, mate. Although she doesn't understand the difference between gender and sex, or if she probably does understand it, but... So anyway, The maniac at the Lewiston, Maine bowling alley was sneaked up on by suicide, and then he died by suicide, as if suicide were another perpetrator in the incident. The maniac's family is allowing further studies to be done on his brain in an effort, they say, to help prevent future tragedies. Uh-huh. And so I can understand why the family... Actually, I can't forgive it. I'm sorry. All of us, instead of trying to find some physical trauma that explains why people are going crazy and killing each other... Because, by the way, just so you know, there's been a hand grenade training center somewhere operating for the last 150 years. So there's been thousands, if not tens of thousands of young men and middle-aged men exposed for decades to long-term exposure to low-level explosions. This has been going on since before any of us were born. And none of them, up until this guy, went into a bowling alley and started murdering people. So I'm sorry. No. This, looking for a problem, a physical problem with this guy's brain, is an understandable reaction by his family, because they don't understand that what they're really looking for and what they want is they want a substitute for recognizing all of our responsibility for warning people off of selfishness and evil and indulging selfishness and evil, which sadly is what their son did and then became. Just utterly selfish and evil. That's why he did this. It's not because he was a hand grenade trainer and he was exposed to low-level and he suffered myelin loss and inflammation, small blood vessel injury. Take a look at my brain right now. I'm sure I got that. I'm sure you got that. We all got that. We're all breaking down and suffering with all kinds of physical maladies. And if you add to that the pursuit and entertainment of selfishness and evil, eventually you become utterly selfish, utterly evil, and you might even just walk into a bowling alley and slaughter people and destroy your own family. Not only has he destroyed countless families through what he did, he's destroyed his own family. It's horrible. His name should be blotted out from all of history. He should be a byword. The blotting out of his name should be a byword to everyone about how evil and horrible and selfish and wicked the guy was. And we've blotted his name out here at the Weekly Worldview. We are not going to say we try not to say the name of any of these maniacs. All right. Now, should we go from the suicide to the State of the Union address, or should we go from the State of the Union address to a suicide attempt? So I'm kidding. I've never contemplated suicide. Never. Not for one moment in my entire life have I ever actually contemplated it. So please don't call any health, mental health professionals. Don't have anyone get in touch with me. I'll be fine. In order to avoid any suicidal ideations, I simply avoided watching the State of the Union address. I'm not going to put myself through anything like that. I've never contemplated suicide, nor do I want to. So there are certain things I avoid, and I focus instead on important issues like, how about the personhood of all human beings from the moment of conception? I've got an article from the Washington Post that, oddly enough, was not behind a paywall. Most Washington Post articles these days are behind a paywall. This one was not. Why? Because it's a pro-abort article. It's a pro-abort op-ed, and they don't put those behind a paywall because they want everybody to read them. That's why. This is by Ruth Marcus, associate editor and baby killer at the Washington Post. And her opinion is maybe we should thank the Alabama Supreme Court for its, what she calls a bizarre ruling, that frozen embryos are children. She calls it bizarre. She uses the term frozen embryos because she is like, she might as well be an artificial intelligence programmed bot. She's programmed to call the decision bizarre because who would ever think that a baby's a person? That's bizarre. And it's but not just a frozen embryo. These are frozen. Okay. So, but she says we should thank them. Ironically, she says it because she says while the decision seemed absurd to many, they're bizarre and absurd within the first paragraph, just like AI was programmed to do. Bizarre and absurd. Even though the decision seems absurd to many, but it has shown a needed spotlight on the concept of, in quotation marks, fetal personhood, unquote. The ruling might help, says Beth Marcus, associate baby killer at the Washington Post. She says the ruling might help thwart efforts to go even further with this bizarre, absurd concept of fetal personhood. She goes on to say, more than a half century ago, Texas argued that the fetus is entitled to protection under the 14th Amendment. The Supreme Court rejected that argument and issued their Roe versus Wade decision 8 days after Roe was decided in 1973. The first human life amendment to the Constitution was introduced in Congress, and it became a standard plank in the Republican Party, and that's as far as it ever went. Because abortion reigned from Roe till today, even though there were human rights amendments coming up every election cycle by the Republicans, oddly enough. And it was a standard plank of the Republican Party, and even though they fielded four or five presidents, how many? How many Congresses did they control? A few and nothing. Anyway, now, says Ruth Marcus, associate baby killer at Washington Post, now Roe is gone, but the campaign for fetal personhood has taken on a new role. Yes. She says, committed anti-abortion advocates see claims of fetal personhood as one of the most straightforward and effective paths toward outlawing abortion, is a short way to say it. Outlawing abortion. The Dobbs majority, says Ruth Marcus, associate baby killer. She says the Dobbs majority ignored advocates of fetal personhood. And in an amicus brief filed on behalf of a former frozen embryo implanted in an adoptive mom, there was an amicus brief filed arguing that abortion had to be banned because with the advent of IVF, viability outside the womb actually occurs at fertilization, which, by the way, IVF proves that, that they're viable because we've done it. But Samuel Alito disclaimed any views about any of that or anything about anything at all to do with anything to do with when prenatal life is entitled to any rights enjoyed after birth. Brett Kavanaugh went on and took pains to make clear that the court was not adopting a theory of fetal personhood. He even wrote emphatically, quote, this is Brett Kavanaugh, no justice of this court has ever advanced that position. An unborn child is a person, or what they call a fetus. I'm sorry, a fetus. But Ruth Marcus, the associate baby killer over at the Washington Post, goes on to say that the fetal personhood movement arose mostly out of Christian theology and beliefs about ensoulment. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there is no other logical route to fetal personhood other than Christian beliefs about ensoulment. Yes, she's right about that. She says that Christians are claiming today that their ideas about ensoulment are being couched in irrefutable science. These Christians say that genetically distinct entities are entitled to legal and moral respect. And then Ruth Marcus, associate baby killer, says this has a certain intellectually consistent clarity compared with the unscientific and arbitrary line drawing by abortion rights opponents. And associate baby killer Ruth could add to that Samuel Alito and Brett Kavanaugh. I'm your host, Doug McBurney. That's for you, Brett. That's for you, Sammy. That's right. I know I let it go a little long, but you know what? Sometimes you got to let it roll, and you got to roll with it. So we stay in the... Say again now.
You got scared of COVID.
Oh, yeah. Well, who didn't? Now, let's stay within the personhood file here, because we have more stories regarding the... Really, an earthquake ruling by the Alabama Supreme Court, for which we were thankful that the Supreme Court justice who wrote the opinion mentioned God, life, all the things that underpin a successful civilization were mentioned in the Supreme Court decision in Alabama that said you can't discard unborn children in the garbage or destroy them even by accident. If you do, you're liable. And use the term person, unborn child, God, all that great. It was fabulous. Well, I have an article now here from the New York Times, again, from the New York Times about the law that Republicans in Alabama passed. We talked a little bit about this last week. It was up for a vote. It's passed. They passed it so fast. Legislation to shield in vitro fertilization providers from civil and criminal liability passed the Alabama legislature. Now, folks, the lawsuit in question was a civil lawsuit, but in light of the Supreme Court's decision, the Republican legislature realized they needed to pass some criminal protection. Why? Because it became obvious to everyone that what's happening is criminal. The lawsuit was civil, but this criminal protection is strong evidence that IVF clinics and the Republicans in the Alabama legislature know what's actually going on. They know that living human beings are being discarded and killed. They know it. They know what's happening in the IVF clinics. They know that children are being killed. And the fact that the IVF clinics are making children that live and are born, that doesn't make up for the fact that they're killing them. Yes, some of them are being born, but many of them are being killed. And the one doesn't make up for the other. So they passed this criminal liability protection for the IVF clinics, who basically admitted their guilt. or at least their concern for guilt. And then Governor Kaye, a Republican girl who is the, what is she, the governor, she immediately signed the one-page bill into law. A one-page bill! How long has it been since a one-page bill was? Anyway, lawmakers, let's see here, who is this talking here? This is the New York Times. Lawmakers and legal experts acknowledged that the law did not address existential questions raised by the court about the definition of personhood, leaving open the prospect of legal challenges in the future. Legal challenges in the future, that's nothing. How about criminal challenges on Judgment Day? That's so the language of the Supreme Court justice in Alabama made everyone aware of the fact that they were guilty. That's what happened. And boy, watching politicians and lawyers scramble when their obvious guilt has been laid bare in front of God and everybody is something to witness. They can whip up a one-page bill to protect themselves and pass it in the legislature. They can't pass a bill to regulate how water is exchanged between two counties in less than 400 pages and 2 years of legal back and forth. But when it comes to covering up for their own guilt, one page, less than 2 weeks, done. The New York Times goes on, barely 2 weeks after the ruling, this legislation demonstrated the intense urgency among Republicans to protect IVF treatments, even if that meant sidestepping the thorny contradictions between their pledge to protect unborn life and fertility treatment practices. What are these fertility treatment practices that could possibly contradict a pledge to protect unborn life? What could that be? Well, anyway, it's the aforementioned guilt that's been laid bare in front of God and everybody, and that nobody can deny. But the Republicans who passed the bill, they stopped short of addressing whether an embryo should be considered a person, revealing that the real intense urgency among the Republicans was to avoid the issue in at least an unequivocal statement on the issue until after the November election, but obviously to raise as much money on it as possible by saying, we want to protect children and we want to protect IVF. Send us some money so we can get elected, and then maybe we'll revisit this whole thorny issue around when life begins. Oh, but they don't even want to answer that. Now, you could ask a second grader when life begins and they could answer the question. Now, it might not be the absolute perfect scientifically, ethically, morally, spiritually accurate answer, but it would be an answer that you could comprehend and that was generally correct. If you asked a second grader, when does life begin? They could pretty much answer it. But if you ask Republican legislator Terry Collins, who carried this legislation in the Alabama legislature, her answer is, I don't want to define life. It's too important to me, to my faith. So what does that mean? How? I mean, if your faith should call upon you to, yes, you don't have to define life, by the way, Terry. God's already done that. If you have faith, then He already wrote the answer for you. All you have to do is repeat it. But you don't want to do that because, I don't know. Anyway, they say she led a previous effort in the House to ban abortion in 2019. Of course, you read that in the article and you think, wow, she wants to ban abortion. But I didn't have time to go into read the legislation, but I know it's not a ban on abortion. It's not. She didn't carry a bill to ban abortion. She carried a bill to regulate the killing of unborn children differently than Democrats would do it. That's what she did. The New York Times calls it to ban abortion because they're all in on the racket. State Senator Dan, who's another Republican, he asked, now listen to what Dan asked. He said, does that embryo have a soul or not have a soul? Ooh. Does it have a soul or does it not have a soul? Now, if he's a good lawyer never asks a question that he doesn't know the answer to. Now, Senator Dan did not answer the question, which he should have, because otherwise, then that gives lie to the to the myth that there are no stupid questions. That's a stupid question. Does an embryo have a soul or does it not have a soul? Of course it has a soul, is what he should have said rhetorically, but he didn't, because maybe he doesn't know. Or actually, he knows, but he wants to act like he doesn't know because, you know, there's an election coming up. The New York Times closes the article with a tug at the old heartstrings. Women and doctors have been in limbo for an agonizing 2 weeks, with fertility clinic operators reporting that some of their clients just sob. They just sob. I want my baby, says the mom at the in vitro fertilization clinic. And so that's supposed to tug at our heartstrings. But what they don't mention is that hundreds of thousands of innocent children are destroyed in IVF clinics every year because of the way IVF is practiced, which is immoral and unethical and criminal, as a matter of fact. It's criminal what they do. Now, I personally believe that there is an ethical and moral way to pursue in vitro fertilization, and that's just you do it so that nobody is killed or discarded or thrown in the trash ever. That's all. That's the rule. If you want to create a child in a petri dish, you have to do everything within your power to bring that child to birth, or you can't kill it. That's all. You can't kill it. You can't throw it away. You cannot prevent that child from having an opportunity to eventually be born, or at least be given the opportunity to pursue growth and life. And you know, not all of us live. Not all normal, not all naturally occurring babies live. Not all of them. In fact, there's good evidence that maybe as many as half of all naturally occurring pregnancies end in some sort of death of the fetus prior to birth. There's some good evidence for that. So that's all we have to do, is facilitate to the best of our ability, just like we do for everyone else. We just don't kill anybody. That's all. All right, I've said enough about that. That's all I can say. All right, it's despicable to watch Republicans bamboozle gullible evangelicals. And I'm sorry if you're sitting whining and crying in an IVF clinic, I want my baby. Well, you know what? Your baby is not as important as the heart and soul of all the mothers, you included, Mom, who are participating in immoral and unethical behavior and even killing people. You having a baby is not more important than that. And if you feel bad because suddenly people realize this is not good and we have to stop, well, I'm sorry. Actually, I'm not even sorry. Yeah, you're going to feel bad. People feel bad all the time. A lot of times people feel bad when they realize they've been doing something wrong and someone comes in and corrects them and helps them learn how to do it right. Or how to change their focus instead of on their own selfishness onto other things. All right. Now, what should I do here? So in the face of all that, enormous civilizationally consequential debates, arguments, discussions going on in the Alabama legislature about the wholesale slaughter of innocent people, and when does life begin, and how do we respect life? How do we honor God in not breaking his eternal commandment, you shall not murder? How do we do that? That's what's happening in Alabama. Meanwhile, next door in Louisiana, this is from the Last Days of Rome file. Governor Jeff, up there in Baton Rouge, he's a Republican. He issued a disaster declaration for Louisiana's crawfish industry. Uh-huh. That's right. He's hoping to secure federal resources to help Louisiana's crawfish industry. Why? Because he's a communist, and he doesn't even know he's a communist. That's how long we've been being dragged into this welfare state socialism. People think he's a conservative Republican. He's asking for money from people who are going $1 trillion in debt every 90 days. He wants them to help with the crawfish in Louisiana. Excuse me, Governor Jeff. There are bigger issues that the government needs to solve other than the crawfish crisis going on. That's right. You know what's happened? Down in LSU says that in Louisiana, the crawfish industry has experienced an estimated $140 million in potential losses due to extreme drought and record high temperatures. And so what does the conservative Republican in Louisiana do? He asks for welfare money. Why? Because there's no Christians around telling him to do what he should do. Hey, governor, pray for rain. Weekly Worldview, and I am your host, Doug McBurney. Thanks for sticking with us. Welcome back. We're almost to the end here, and I just wanted to compare a couple of headlines. That story I just read about Governor Jeff in Louisiana asking for help, wants to help the crawfish farmers or whatever they're called, the crawfish industry. That was posted up on a conservative, allegedly conservative website. There was another story just below it, talking about California moving to expand their zero down interest free home loan program to illegal immigrants. So these allegedly right-wing news aggregators, they try to put up stories that make Republicans look good and make Democrats look bad. So Republican governor stands up for the crawfish industry by being a communist and asking. Meanwhile, in California, they want to give illegal zero down interest free home loans. So your average MAGA hat wearing video game addict thinks, boy, those Democrats are bad. Anyway, so you read the articles, and so the right wing website, they post the zero down interest rate home loan. That makes the MAGA mad. And the left wing websites, which I'm sure I don't check them all that often, but they probably post the article so that all the communist pinkos, they feel so good about themselves, how much they love illegal aliens. We're going to give them all zero down interest free home loans. But when you read the details of what this California plan is, it's the typical bureaucratic communist program. It reminds me of welfare that I was exposed to when I was a relatively young person. When I was really young, I was very poor. And at one point, myself and my extremely attractive audio engineer, we came to a point where we weren't sure how we were going to eat. And it was because I was being an irresponsible knucklehead. That's why we got that poor. And so we ended up going to some sort of government soup kitchen program or something like that. And we stood in line for about 5 minutes. And I said, baby, let's get out of here. I'll do anything. I'll even work. There is no way I'm going to humiliate myself in this line with all these people for a bowl of soup or whatever they're handing out. We're out of here. Anyway, the rest is history, as they say. But listen to this program from California. Number one, it offers up to 20% down payment or closing costs not to exceed $150,000. One borrower must be a first-generation home buyer. All borrowers must be a first-time home buyer. The income must meet the low-income limits for whatever county it is you're purchasing the home in. And then, if you make it over all those hurdles, then you have to register for a voucher. And after you've humiliated yourself by saying, look, I'm poor, pathetic. I'm hopeless. Help me, please. Please, sir. Please, may I have another? To 15 bureaucrats, you get in a line, and then you get to draw a ticket for a randomized drawing that will select a voucher for who will receive the 20% down, zero interest home loan. And then, after going through all that humiliation, and then if you happen to win the lottery and get the welfare loan, upon the sale of the home, the home buyer repays the original down payment plus a share of the appreciation in the value of the home, unless you sign up for another program that they've got in place. And then you may not know about that program, but all the governors and the bureaucrats' friends and their kids and the illegals who vote for them, they've been taught how to navigate all these programs. So the taxpayers subsidize everything for them for their whole lives. And there's an army of bureaucrats trained to guide potential voters through all of this humiliation, ensuring that they will vote for the socialist governing cabal. So anyway, it's just all very, it's disheartening to see where the country has. I mean, can you imagine at the end of the Constitutional Convention, or just pick any event of the 18th century, that they would ever imagine that we'd have a lottery to give poor people a loan to buy a house? I mean, can you imagine? I don't know. Maybe they did imagine. All right, now let's get to the State of the Union address, because speaking of communists, over at the State of the Union address last week, the Democrat women wore white. That's right. They wore white. Democrat women dressed up like nurses. Basically, I guess that's their way of saying, I'll kill your baby myself. Come on over here. Look, I've got a white coat on. I'll kill the baby. Bring the baby over here. No, bring the mother over here. We'll kill the baby before it's born. What's with the white? What's with the wearing white? So they say it's to mimic the suffragettes. But I think it's to make a much more sinister. That's right. Come on over here. Meanwhile, the Republicans, not to be outdone, the Republicans wore pins honoring Lake and Riley. Why? Why would Republicans wear a pin honoring Lake and Riley? Because wearing a pin means you never have to execute a murderer. And if you're a Republican, that's the last thing you ever want to do. Is the real way to honor Lake and Riley would be to introduce legislation immediately so that anyone who murders another human being should be put on fast-track trial and, if convicted, put to death publicly and painfully. That would be the way. The real way to honor Lake and Riley would be to execute murderers and to prevent the idea of kidnapping, assaulting, and murdering a young girl. That idea should not cross the mind of anyone ever. That should be the government's goal, to make it such a terrifying prospect that you would ever even think about that nobody even thinks about it. But if you're a Republican, you just wear a pin. All right, now during the State of the Union, apparently the members of the squad, which are the terrorists in the Congress, they wore Palestinian keffiyeh. Keffiyeh. It's the checkered thing, the checkered tablecloth, like Yasser Arafat used to wear. They wore them during. I don't know. It's like, do you have to switch between like the baby killing nurse white outfit with the Jew killing keffiyeh? What? How? Or did they just wear both? They had the baby killing nurse suit on and the Jew killing keffiyeh on their head. Did they wear burkas or veils or anything like that? Now, did the Republicans wear cowboy hats or boots? And so we're basically living in the Soviet Union. Eventually, it'll look like a Chinese fire drill with the members of Congress changing outfits and pins and hats, and faster than the Soviets changed premiers in the 1980s, for crying out loud. We're living in our own Western version of the Soviet Union. I mean, what purport to be both sides are obviously under control of the same side. And that side is not our side. Or it's not my side anyway, I'll tell you that. Because I can tell it's not God's side. And when he comes down on these people, especially the ones who like to use his name in their speeches, which is pretty much all of them, when he comes down on these people, when the hammer falls on this regime, and I don't just mean this administration, on this regime, well, I just don't want to be associated with any part of it. I don't want to have on the pin. I don't want to have on the none of that. So I'll just opt out. Thank you very much. All right. Meanwhile, we go to Matt Walsh over at the Daily Wire, where this is, we get this from the low and to the right file. Low and to the right. That's right. If any of you have ever been on the rifle range, then you know what I mean by low and to the right. Matt Walsh wrote an article about the War Path. I call them the War Path. It's the WPATH, World Professional Association for Transgender Health. Matt Walsh exposed the War Path organization as the organization that writes guidance for hospitals and clinics. This guidance is cited by hospital and clinics as the authority they follow on so-called trans health care. Matt Walsh notes that in court, the ACLU argued that Warpath's professional opinions are enough to overturn the will of an overwhelming majority of voters in the state of Tennessee. Okay, so this is where Matt Walsh loses me. He always gets into the political minutiae and the weeds. I would not put it that way, Matt. Who cares that the ACLU and a bunch of transgendered freaks are overturning the will of any voter? I mean, Matt, there's a Bible and there's 5,000 years of history and reality that you could quote. But Matt refers to a specific case. I don't know. I suppose, Matt, this is how Matt makes his living, is in the political, grinding the political mill. He talks about the case opinion. And he goes on to say that, in fact, Warpath, the World Professional Association of Transgender Health, has presented limited data on long-term physical, psychological, and neurodevelopment outcomes of puberty blockers and cross-sex hormones in children. Documentation at Warpath, says Matt, is, he says that they have documented evidence that gender-affirming care is an unscientific scam that ruins the lives of children and permanently damages their body and, crucially, the documents prove that Warpath knows it. Matt then goes on in this article to catalog one of the most grotesque and sick lists of things done to other human beings by demented doctors and psychopaths that I've ever read. I had to stop after the second one. You can't read this. You don't want this information in your mind that this was done to another human being. You don't want that. So I had to stop. But I got the picture. I got the picture of what they're doing, Matt. Trust me. I know. With the cutting and the slicing and the drugging. I know what they're doing to teenage kids. I know. Matt Walsh says, the good news is there's a simple solution. The simple solution, according to Matt Walsh, Warpath standards of care, just because they say they provide a standard of care doesn't mean doctors, hospitals, and medical schools have to follow them. Medical professionals have the capability of rejecting barbarism and doing what's right, says Matt. And so, Matt, they might have the capability. No, I don't know that they have the capability. They have the capacity, that's for sure. Do they have the capability? I mean, Matt, did you live through COVID? Do you really think they have the capacity or the capability to do what's right? Do you really think so? I mean, where have you been? I would say the simple solution to getting rid of the sex change maniacs And criminals, the simple solution does not lie with the medical profession. In fact, I think that's where the problem lies, as a matter of fact. Now, Matt does go on to say that Warpath and everything it stands for has been exposed. Warpath, by the way, is WPATH, World Professional Association for Transgender Health. And Matt says now it's time for the medical profession to do what it should. Well, what should they do, Matt? Matt doesn't say. He expects them to be able to figure it out, which is showing that Matt's a bit naive. Matt, you need to tell them. They need to call the police. That's what needs to happen. And Matt, you need to be calling on legislators to pass laws that say this is criminal. In fact, I don't even think we need laws. I think we had laws. How this ever became a thing is beyond me. Because to abuse a minor, I mean, we had laws against that. Doctors were not allowed to commit malpractice on minor children in violation of everything that we've known from Genesis to 5 minutes ago. We all knew this was degenerate, maniacal, evil, wicked, corrupt, sinful behavior, Matt. Criminal behavior. Matt does not point out in his article, and I like Matt Walsh, he doesn't point out in the article that what Warpath does in issuing this guidance is criminal. It's advocating criminal behavior. And that's against the law, or it always has been, but I think as a society, we've lost the ability to recognize criminal behavior, and I'm afraid that includes, in some cases, Matt Walsh. And I'm happy to, if Matt Walsh wants to issue a statement, I'm happy to hear him out on it. All right, so I'm almost out of, finally, let's go to this. We'll close with this, folks. So you wonder, how could it be that Matt Walsh doesn't understand that it's his obligation to say this is criminal? And not to argue about the minutiae of who's being hurt or whose health is damaged or who may be violating a certain statute. That's all beside the point. This has nothing to do with statute. This has to do with long-standing criminal behavior. What's been recognized throughout history as criminal behavior, Matt? How does Matt Walsh not know that he's obligated to say that in this article? In every article he writes that talks about this, he needs to mention that this is criminal. Not mention it. He needs to declare it, shout it from the rooftops. Well, how is it that a guy like Matt Walsh may not really understand his obligation? Well, listen to this. Got a story here from the post-millennial. Tim Tebow testified before Congress regarding the kidnapping and rape of children. Now they call it something different. I'll get to it here. Tim Tebow urged Congress to create a rescue team to fight child sex trafficking in his testimony last week. The rescue team would consist of a team of analysts who would locate and protect minors who've been seen in sexually abusive imagery. It would also increase the United States Department of Homeland Security capacities on the subject, modernize the International Child Sexual Exploitation Database in order to keep up with the expanding global threat. It would also create a position within law enforcement agencies that would solely focus on identifying victims in the aforementioned abusive imagery. So Tim, who has to watch that imagery in order to recognize the children? So you want to give someone the job of watching this? That's not so right there. When you realize we're going to have to ask someone to watch this, you should realize, okay, there has to be another solution, because you can't sentence someone. That's their job. They can't do that. You can't do that. Tim Tebow should recognize that, but maybe no one recognizes that we're actually enabling an industry of kidnapping and rape, what they call child sex trafficking. That's kidnapping and raping children is being subsidized by our own behavior, and even by Congress. And well, just listen to this. Republican Representative Andy Biggs, Arizona, said the United States has a duty to protect children. Democrat Rep. Madeline So-and-So says she praised the effort to create a rescue team and have somebody watch dirty videos and identify the children. She praised the effort and urged the House to pass this life-saving bill. And so you've got to wonder, how does a guy like Tim Tebow, who is probably the most preeminent Christian on the planet, how does he not recognize what's happening here? How does he not recognize his responsibility to say, wait a minute, we shouldn't have to have someone watch these videos. We need to stop these videos from being made. That's what we need to figure out. How does Tim not know that? Well, in September of 2020, Donald Trump granted Tim Tebow and his foundation $100 million. And then the Justice Department gave Tim Tebow's foundation another $35 million, meaning the government has paid Tim Tebow's foundation $135 million to, quote, help victims of child sex trafficking. So the oligarchy has paid off Christianity's most visible spokesman to blind him to his duties to advocate for swift and sure justice. That $135 million is an investment by the devil to keep Tim Tebow and his foundation focused on snatching children from the jaws of death rather than advocating for government action so that the children never get to that point. The devil wants to make sure Tim Tebow never understands his responsibility and the enormous opportunity he's been given to advocate for justice against those kidnapping and raping children. And if I ever get a chance to talk with Tim, I'll be sure to tell him. If the Christians would help the government understand justice, we could all focus on spreading the gospel and growing in our understanding of God instead of where we're headed, which is where most of humanity has been most of the time throughout all of history. Most of mankind have spent the vast majority of their energy and resources just trying to keep the criminals and tyrants off them. But we had this amazing time of peace and prosperity, and the people who are going to be rewarded most for what they did with it are going to be people that few of us ever heard of. And it's going to be people who stood up and called for what's right and didn't just manage what's going wrong. That's the Weekly Worldview. Thank you for tuning in. Lord willing, we'll join you next week. Until then, may the grace of God go with you and may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.